some of the water during the blob warm period spilled into the Bering Sea region.
Scientists ponder the effects of warm water on Bering Sea marine life. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, July 26th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the Nushagak Fishing District is closed as officials attempt to contain a fuel leak from a capsized vessel.
With the weather conditions we have, it's not ideal. You know, if it was a hot, sunny day, it would go away a lot quicker than on a cold, rainy day.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
The director of the Tanana Chiefs Conference Village Public Safety Officer Program has been charged with leaving the scene of an accident, a misdemeanor, and felony criminal mischief. Alaska State Troopers report that 41-year-old Jody Potts of Fairbanks used her truck to push a car, blocking her from getting out of a parking spot at the Tanana Lakes Recreation Area on July 4th. The car was pushed into the middle of a parking lot and sustained nearly $3,000 in front-end damage. Potts drove off, but a witness followed her and contacted troopers. Potts is a rural public safety leader and has been a keynote speaker at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention. Asked if Potts is still on the job, TCC spokeswoman Doreen Deaton says the organization does not comment on personnel matters. A TCC statement describes Potts as a, quote, effective advocate for public safety in Alaska for over a decade, adding that her, quote, tireless commitment to Interior Alaska has been instrumental to changes in policies and standards, resulting in the improvement of rural public safety. A new study paints an optimistic economic portrait of Anchorage in the next 3 years, projecting the city will exit its economic recession by 2019. The Associated Press reports the Outlook study released Wednesday by the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation expects the city to see positive indicators by next year, with job loss leveling out and economic confidence rising. According to the State Department of Labor and Workforce Development, the city has lost about 6,000 jobs since 2015. The Anchorage report projects almost no employment gains through 2020, but 800 new jobs are expected in 2021. The city's population decline is projected to stop this year and remain stagnant for the next 2 years. The city is projected to see marginal population gains in 2021. Well, you've heard of the blob. That's the pool of warmer than normal water that wreaked havoc on fish and wildlife populations in the North Pacific, including in the Gulf of Alaska. After several years, the blob is gone. But to the north in the Bering Sea, temperatures are still way above normal. And as Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk reports, scientists are trying to figure out what the lingering heat means for some of the world's largest commercial fisheries.
The Bering Sea produces nearly half of the United States' annual catch of fish and shellfish. That's one reason scientists are looking closely at the warm temperatures there. Phyllis Stabenow is an oceanographer in Seattle with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
The Bering Sea is an extremely productive ecosystem that produces immense amounts of commercial fish for the U.S. And that's part of NOAA's mission, is to manage these type of things.
In the winter, vast expanses of ice also help insulate coastal villages from storms. And the ice can be a platform for subsistence hunters searching for seals and walrus. Except that last winter, there was far less ice in the Bering Sea than scientists have ever seen. Part of the reason was that the water was abnormally warm. Remember the blob, the North Pacific heat wave? It's gone now, and temperatures south of the Bering Sea have cooled off. But in the Bering Sea, they haven't. John Walsh is chief scientist at the International Arctic Research Center in Fairbanks.
The blob has essentially faded away. Water temperatures are pretty close to normal in that region. But what happened is that some of the water during the blob warm period spilled into the Bering Sea region. That heat that was picked up in the Bering Sea has not gone away.
Walsh was part of a group of scientists that published a paper earlier this year on Alaska ocean warmth. They think the blob's presence contributed initially to warming in the Bering Sea. But the Bering Sea has also warmed independently from the blob, thanks to persistent winds from the south. And without as much sea ice, which reflects sunlight, temperatures can climb even higher. Scientists aren't sure exactly what the changes will mean for fish, but they're trying to figure it out in part because the Bering Sea is home to some of the world's most lucrative fisheries, like pollock, which you can buy at McDonald's. Researchers want to know how Bering Sea temperatures will affect the $400 million annual pollock catch and other species. Scientists initially thought pollock would thrive in warmer water, but it turns out the heat may not be so good for pollock's food, a type of plankton. As water temperatures change, researchers are also seeing shifts in which species are found where. Here's Stabenow, the NOAA scientist.
What we've discovered is the ecosystem is always more complicated than we think. It's like playing chess. You can't just look at one attack. You have to look at everything. We do know there will be winners and there will be losers if the system changes enough. But we can't say who they are at this point.
The paper published this year says the warmer Bering Sea temperatures can't be explained without human-caused climate change, just like the blob in the Gulf of Alaska. But some of the warmth also appears to stem from natural variation. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
A capsized vessel near Clark's Point in Bristol Bay is leaking fuel. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has closed the entire Nooshagak Commercial Fishing District due to concerns that diesel in the water could contaminate fish and fishing gear. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
The Pacific Knight sank Wednesday morning with reportedly 800 gallons of diesel fuel and 300 gallons of hydraulic fuel on board. Fish and Game received reports that fuel was leaking from the vessel this morning. In response, the department issued an advisory to fishermen to move away from the site of the accident. Area management biologist Tim Sands flew a survey of the area.
We saw quite a bit of fuel in the water, what I would call kind of large patches of rainbow sheen, heading southwest from where the vessel was, and we flew it for over 3 miles, and then we didn't want to go any further out over the bay. My concern was I don't know where that's going to go and how fast it's going to break up.
At 1 o'clock this afternoon, Fish and Game closed the entire district to commercial fishing and cautioned subsistence users on Dillingham beaches that their nets and fish are also at risk of contamination.
Out of an abundance of caution, we decided to close the fishery until we could more thoroughly evaluate the situation. I flew again this afternoon. Things look better. They're hopefully going to have some salvage people come in and plug the vents so the vessel stops leaking. We do want to get people back in the water, but we just can't afford to have contaminated fish in the product stream.
So far, there have been no reports of contaminated fish. Sands said that eventually the fuel will disperse, but how quickly depends on weather and water conditions. Right now, temperatures in the area are in the mid-50s, and drizzly rain is forecasted to continue throughout the weekend.
With the weather conditions we have, it's not ideal. You know, if it was a hot, sunny day, it would go away a lot quicker than on a cold, rainy day. But eventually, it will go away.
It's not clear when fishing will open again in the district. While the sockeye run to the Nooshagak is winding down, some fishermen were still participating. Sands also said the number of pink and coho salmon in the area are picking up.
I'm hopeful that we can do some partial openings as soon as tomorrow, especially, you know, for Gooshik Beach and whatnot, but I just want to be sure.
According to Alaska State Troopers, the cause of the accident is still under investigation. Three people were on board when the boat capsized. Two were rescued from the water. Alaska State Troopers are continuing to search for 59-year-old John Phillips of Juneau. However, the United States Coast Guard suspended its search Wednesday night. In a press release, Lieutenant Stephen Nolan, the District 17 Command Duty Officer, said, quote, "Ending a search is never easy, especially when working alongside so many people dedicated to finding the missing person. Our condolences go out to this man's family and friends during this time of hardship," unquote. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Klukwan residents are using audio storytelling to preserve their Tlingit roots.
That's just what they want to know, like how did the elders grow up? What do they remember about how Klukwan used to be?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Landing a job in Alaska's high-demand industries like welding, construction, medical billing, or marine transportation is now more affordable. The University of Alaska has reduced tuition for more than 300 career and technical education courses by 25%. From Ketchikan to Kotzebue, there has never been a better time to get started on your path to a new career. Learn more at www.alaska.edu/starthere. This message brought to you by the University of Alaska.
Voting is underway in a special election to pick a new assembly member to represent West Anchorage. The seat opened up when Assemblymember Tim Steele stepped down in June for health reasons. Here to explain the race and what's at stake is Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello, Casey.
So, Zach, not to be rude, but why does this race even matter for people beyond Anchorage neighborhoods like Spinard, Turnagain, and Sand Lake, the areas this local official will represent?
I think it's a good question. This is definitely on the extreme side of hyper-local politics. I mean, we're talking about one of two seats representing West Anchorage on an 11-member body. You know, this isn't exactly the governor's race. But at the same time, the Anchorage Assembly has a disproportionate influence on state politics, stemming in part from Anchorage's role as the state's main hub. So even if you live in, let's say, Unalakleet or King Cove or Tenneke Springs, you're likely bumping into assembly decisions anytime you pass through Anchorage in the form of bed taxes on hotels, permits for businesses you might be shopping at, and even the money you spend buying gas or groceries when the body weighs different tax policies. Also, the assembly is like a bit of a farm league for politicians who go on to become mayor or get into the legislature or statewide office. People like Tony Knowles, Mark Begich, Anna McKinnon, to name just a few, they all came through the Anchorage Assembly.
So what's interesting about this race, though? Do we know who's likely to win?
Well, one thing that's interesting is that this is a really fast race. It's just a few weeks between when candidates file to run, ballots being sent out, and then when they're due back on August 7th. So the campaign playbook is, well, compressed would be one way to put it. And like I mentioned, it's a mail-based election, only the second one for the city, so candidates and residents are adjusting to those dynamics, too. Technically, there are seven candidates, but only three have campaigns that are organized enough to be considered serious. And what I mean by that is that the candidate has put the work into getting meaningful endorsements, getting literature or digital media out in front of voters, or attracted endorsements. And I interviewed all three of those candidates, and we'll start with the one who's got a presumed lead in the race, and that's 38-year-old Austin Quinn Davidson.
I've lived in Anchorage for 7 years.
Quinn Davidson has amassed the largest war chest in the brief race at more than $34,000, much of which is from individuals as well as political action groups representing labor unions. She's racked up endorsements from six sitting assembly members, along with multiple progressive organizations and prominent Democratic politicians. But Quinn Davidson says she isn't interested in bringing partisanship to the assembly.
In my profession, what I do is bridge the gap and bring different groups together. And I think that's what we want on the assembly. We want someone who's a bridge builder, and that's what I bring.
Quinn Davidson is a lawyer for the Great Land Trust, an environmental conservation organization. In door knocking throughout the district, she says crime is the number one issue that residents tell her about. And she wants to address it by continuing to grow the police force and putting more resources towards what she calls root causes, like substance abuse.
The percentage of these calls I'm responding to that are related to drugs has spiked in the last few years. So I think that there's an opportunity there to take a hard look at what are we doing and where are we filling the gaps if there isn't state money to pay to address some of the opioid addiction that we're facing.
Quinn Davidson shies away from offering specific proposals she would advance on the assembly, tending instead to emphasize process. She likes the recently approved ordinance on accessory dwelling units because it received lots of input from community councils. Likewise, if elected, she wants to solicit advice from small businesses on how to revise and improve the local permitting process. Quinn Davidson is one of only two candidates to have gotten donations from the union representing police employees. And the other is Nikki Rose, who, as of her last financial disclosure in early July, had raised less than $2,000. But several prominent conservative figures have thrown support behind the 35-year-old, who grew up in West Anchorage and is now raising her son there with her husband. Rose leads her local community council, and when we spoke in a busy cafe, she explained that if elected, she wants to encourage neighborhood groups to organize citizen patrols in order to confront crime.
One of the things I really enjoy doing is the community patrols, I think that frees up a lot of the officers to do what they really need to do, and that is to get a handle on the bigger issues with crime.
When it comes to measures that are within the assembly's control, Rose doesn't offer many concrete policy proposals. She identifies homelessness in the municipality as another major issue and criticizes the state and current administration for Anchorage's public safety situation, but she doesn't offer many specifics.
Government is best at getting public safety and is best at delivering safe roads, safe utilities, all those kind of parts of government are really important. So I want to focus on those types of issues, and the current administration isn't focusing on and refocusing on those issues.
Rose is running the furthest right in the race, garnering praise and endorsements from prominent conservative and Republican figures like Assemblymember Amy Dymbosky, former Governor Sean Parnell, and several former Anchorage mayors. The third candidate people are watching is 33-year-old Sam Moore.
Occupation, I'm an accounting contractor. I own my own LLC doing outsourced accounting services. Pretty exciting stuff.
Moore is originally from Missouri. He's lived in Anchorage for about 5 years, always in the same district. He's very active in his local community council, and he has a really firm grasp of what kinds of policies are in the purview of a municipal body like the Assembly. So, for example, public safety is one of the issues he thinks is most important in his district, but he's candid about how much actual influence he'd have if elected.
Frankly, there's not a lot someone on the Assembly can do for public safety except for complain to the administration, or eventually, it comes down to the budget. It comes down to holding the chief accountable. It comes down to holding the mayor accountable on these issues. And if the Assembly doesn't feel that, you know, adequate things are being done, then, you know, the budget's going to get some adjustments of one kind or another.
Assembly races are technically nonpartisan, but candidates tend to court members of the two political parties. Moore has been active in Republican politics and describes himself as a progressive Republican. He has a wonk's appreciation for down-in-the-weeds details, eager, for example, to discuss why he thinks the financial valuation of the pending utility sale of MLNP is important, or how come zoning is a critical issue.
Zoning and land use, frankly, is one of the biggest things that I think impacts our daily lives that, frankly, no one's paying attention to. It drives the type of housing we have. It drives the type of commercial, you know, establishments we have. It drives where our breweries are. It drives where your weed dispensary is. Any number of things. It all comes down to zoning.
Moore is visually impaired and has been a consistent advocate for better public transit options and bringing in transportation companies like Uber and Lyft to Anchorage. He's only raised a few thousand dollars, and he does not have many endorsements from unions or public officials. Ballots have been mailed out to qualified voters in West Anchorage. Votes can be cast by sending ballots back through the mail, putting them in drop boxes, or the election center down by Ship Creek by August 7th.
That was Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes. Zach, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, Casey.
Late-run Copper River sockeye continue to come in strong, and the state has scheduled a 90-hour dipnet opening at Chitna that began today. A weaker-than-expected early run shut down fishing last month, but the return has been improving in recent weeks. Department of Fish and Game Area Management Biologist Mark Somerville says it now appears escapement will be met.
Tremendous spikes here of fish later in the season. A good portion of those are probably hatchery-bound fish. So we're seeing strong returns probably there, and then we're also seeing some good late stocks seem to be performing a little bit better than the earlier stocks.
Cautioning that the overall run is still weak based on historic numbers, Somerville says over 680,000 fish have passed a sonar counter at the river's mouth. He says that's enough to ensure the minimum escapement goal for wild salmon and to allow normal management of the dipnet fishery.
Now we're at a point where we feel very comfortable with making that escapement goal, so hopefully we can go right back to just the management plan and manage on a weekly basis based on weekly sonar passage.
Somerville notes that while the summer's early run sockeye were small, the later fish are a little bigger.
We're definitely seeing some larger fish coming in, which just strikes me to say that we've got some healthier stocks coming in, and probably the reason why we're seeing strength in these later stocks.
Somerville says hot weather has seen the Copper River come up, but not so far that it has significantly limited fishing. Well, following a season of heavy regulation, multiple fishing restrictions lifted on the Kuskokwim River today. Tributaries are meeting their state escapement goals for king salmon, and the state estimates that 99% of the species has moved out of the lower river. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur has more.
Across salmon species, state-issued escapement goals are being met in Kuskokwim tributaries, but the King Run remains weak, as they have for the last 5 to 10 years. The escapement goals are set to help ensure sustainable runs and future subsistence harvest. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is operating 6 weirs to monitor king salmon escapement. High water prevented most of the weirs from gaining accurate counts earlier this summer. However, the water level has slowly dropped, and this week, the water level along the Upper River main stem lowered to its historical average for the first time this season. Aerial surveys also indicate escapement goals for king salmon are being met. Though the king numbers aren't strong, other salmon species are logging robust runs. Chum salmon have surpassed their escapement goal. Meanwhile, red salmon escapement is tracking above average. Though silver salmon began arriving this week, many families along the Kuskokwim have stopped fishing to gather salmon berries and blueberries during the gap between the King Run ending and the silvers arriving in greater number. Many families plan to resume fishing once silvers become more abundant in the river and chum salmon have largely cleared out. Other families wanting to avoid kings for conservation reasons say the silver's arrival will mark the beginning of their subsistence salmon fishing. This is the case for Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group Chairwoman Alyssa Nadine Rogers.
My family doesn't go fishing till silvers. We did attempt earlier this year, but after I caught my third king, I said I was done. Like I said, I saved my kings for my elders.
State biologists speculate that the silvers could be arriving later than usual this season. The timing comes during a summer when both the king salmon and red salmon also seem to arrive late on the Kuskokwim. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Do you want to work at a job that contributes to the health of your community? Well, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH, is hiring. SEARCH offers full-time jobs that include health, vision, and dental benefits, as well as paid time off and retirement savings. For more information, visit search.org/jobs and view open positions. Start a rewarding career helping others at SEARCH. Healthy is here. This message sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium.
A company that launches small satellites into orbit is considering Kodiak as the site of its second launch pad. Rocket Lab has an existing relationship with the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, which has offered support services to the company's launches in New Zealand. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
Rocket Lab's launch site would be its first on American soil, but it is an American company. CEO Peter Beck explains Rocket Lab is headquartered in California and funded through venture capital firms in Silicon Valley. But their launch pad is located in New Zealand, and Beck says there's a simple explanation for that.
There's just a lot of stuff in America.
He's talking about planes, trains, and automobiles, and boats. He says every time a company launches a rocket, they have to close off large chunks of the air and sea.
You run into a real issue with the kind of launch frequency that we are trying to achieve by just having U.S. launch sites alone. So, you know, we're licensed down in our launch site in New Zealand to launch every 72 hours. And when you contrast that against America as a country launching 25 times a year, you can see how that is a big effect.
Beck says he started the company in 2006 to serve a growing demand for high-frequency launches for small satellites. Now they're expanding to a second launch pad, which they may place at the Alaska Aerospace Corporation's Kodiak facility, but they're also considering Cape Canaveral in Florida, Wallops Flight Facility in Virginia, and Vandenberg Air Force Base in California.
We'll continue to develop launch sites, but you know, this one's very strategic for us because it serves a real need for our U.S. government customer and also our U.S. commercial customer who may not want to launch out of New Zealand.
He says a couple of the elements they'll consider in their location choice is existing infrastructure, regulatory environment, and how often they can launch. According to Rocket Lab, they'll announce their decision next month, and they hope to set the new launch pad up in 2019. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
The The Klukwan Community Library is carrying out an initiative to preserve the stories of tribal members. Chilkat Stories, Our Village, Our Lives aims to capture the experiences of Klukwan residents of all ages by creating audio recordings of their stories. KHNS's Henry Leisha spoke with Klukwan librarian Jamie Katzik to learn how the series is preserving Tlingit heritage and passing on knowledge to the next generation.
Chilkat Indian Village started the Chilkat Stories project in 2017 with the help of a grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services. Katzik says a needs-based assessment of the community found that people wanted to know more about what life used to be like in Klukwan.
That's just what they want to know, like how did the elders grow up? What do they remember about how Klukwan used to be?
The process is straightforward. Katzik sits down with tribal members and creates audio recordings of their stories about life in Klukwan.
We just want to help increase knowledge about and the interest in our Tlingit heritage. So it's just asking people to pass on information about their life experiences. And it's just explaining about things that happen in Klukwan, just for people that don't have an idea of what it's like to live in a small village.
The purpose of the project is to document and preserve the experiences of elders and tribal members before those stories are lost. Katzik has focused on preserving Tlingit culture through much of her work. Last year, the Klukwan Library received the Guardians of Culture and Lifeways Outstanding Projects Award for a film she produced about traditional food gathering practices in the Chilkat Valley.
The younger generations are kind of not necessarily learning all of the subsistence activities that people used to do in the village. So we wanted to document the process. Some people didn't know how to make dried fish, and some people don't know how to butcher a moose, seal hunting, stuff like that. So it was just, they were meant to be how-to videos so that people could learn skills so that the traditional skill isn't lost.
Fred Strong, one of the tribal members featured in the film, passed away unexpectedly shortly after sharing his expertise for the project. His knowledge of subsistence fishing is accessible to future generations through the films, which are available at the Klukwan and Haines libraries. The Chilkat Stories recordings will be saved in the tribe's archival collection. Participants will also receive a copy of their recordings on a disc. Some of the recorded stories will be edited for broadcast on KHNS. However, this is entirely optional for participants. Katzik says she will continue to collect stories until next summer. She encourages people to share their experiences, no matter what kind of story it may be.
Every story matters, is what I've been telling people. It doesn't matter if, maybe it's something that they would like their great-grandchildren to know about, what they did or what they experienced. So it's helping people preserve stuff, because traditionally, Tlingit knowledge was passed down orally, so we're just helping that.
To participate in the project, tribal members can contact the Klukwan Library. Katzik will help coordinate a time to meet up and record stories. For KHNS, I'm Henry Leisha.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media, and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Nat Herz and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Avery Lill in Dillingham, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and Henry Leisha in Haines. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.